And our talk tonight is going to center on the job market. Amen? And I want to assure you that we have very able and seasoned resource persons in the house. I'm very excited to introduce the very first one of them. He is an international agribusiness, agro-industry, and value chain development expert. He has over 20 years of experience in growing agribusiness in Africa. And he has served as a consultant to many international and local institutions. Examples are the Millennium Challenge Corporation, USAID, GIZ, the EU, ECOWAS, United Nations, amongst others. And he currently is a senior consultant at the Ministry of Trade and Industry under the One District, One Factory. And he... Hallelujah. He has also supported a number of agro-processing firms to secure private financing in excess of $50 million. He is an agribusiness entrepreneur. He has established a number of organizations, the Agri Impact Consult, Fresh Logistics, ASNAP Ghana, an Agri Impact Institute for Innovation and Technology, and the West Africa Greenhouse Limited, which is a partnership between the Dutch government with the Dutch government. And he happens to be the CEO of all these organizations. Another thing I want us to take note of is this. This man has 3 patents in the US. Does any one of us have an idea what a patent is? Let me give you just a brief description. A patent is something, an innovation you come up with, and you register it in your name. You are the one who brought it. So if anybody wants to use that innovation, they have to contact you or seek your permission. And he has these patents, not in Ghana, in the US. He holds a BSc in Agriculture, Agronomy from Kwame Nkrumah University of Science and Technology, an Executive Master of Business Administration from the University of Ghana, and he's a business systems analyst. He has that also from the University of Cape Town. In 2018, he was awarded the Outstanding Ghanaian International Agribusiness Personality of the Year. And in 2019, he was adjudged the Agribusiness Entrepreneur of the Year. He is an elder of the Apostolic Church, Ghana. At the Asylum Down Assembly, Mount Zion Center of Excellence. We are talking about no mean a person than the husband of Dickiness Joyce Akwe, the owner of and CEO of Fasti Body and Hair Care, in the person of Elder Daniel Fahine Akwe. Please give a round of applause, even as he comes to the podium.
Aposa. Hello. I'm happy to see young people, in fact, a lot of young people in this room. Anytime I see young people, I get excited because that is the future of Africa. You can talk about gold, oil, diamonds, bauxite. They won't mean anything if you don't develop the young people, the energy and the talent that they have. Africa and Ghana can only move on if we make the young entrepreneurs or the young people we see here this evening as entrepreneur. And tonight I will be talking more on entrepreneurship. Unfortunately, I might not be doing anything like PowerPoint, which you are used to, because I don't know how to prepare PowerPoint. So you have no option than to listen to me. Where it becomes necessary for me to show a slide, I will let them show the slide. But how many of you are already entrepreneurs in this room? Can you raise your hand if you are? Okay. How many of you want to be entrepreneurs? At least more than half of the people here want to be entrepreneurs. Put your hands together for yourself. One thing that is not difficult at all to be is an entrepreneur. And one thing that is most difficult also to be is an entrepreneur. It is easy to be. It is one of the most difficult things to be. So if you want to get into entrepreneurship, you must have full understanding of what entrepreneurship is. Fortunately, I'm not going to Google to go and give you definition of who an entrepreneur is. But if I tell you a story, you know who an entrepreneur is. When they were introducing me, you were all happy. Were you not happy? Okay. And I started coming to camp meeting like the way you are coming to camp meeting as far back as 1986. So my bones are grown. It's the body that looks a bit fresh. But as for the bones, they are very hard. But when we started coming to camp meeting, we were students and not entrepreneurs. I wasn't even in university yet. I was still in secondary school. Though I knew that I would be an international entrepreneur one day, I didn't know the route that it was going to take. So when I finished school and I started my national service, I didn't joke. If you want to be an entrepreneur, it is not the thing like you dress very well and you are walking in town, or you are always busy on your phone, that makes you an entrepreneur. Your ability to dirty your hands. The things that people don't want to do are the things that will make you an entrepreneur. If everybody is going on the left direction and you join the masses to the left, you will never single yourself out. When your people are going to the left, you look at the opportunities in the right. You exploit that opportunity and you move it to them on the left, and they will make you a rich man. So you finish school and you'll be looking for a job. I know there will be a session on the job market, but let me tell you, in Africa, Africa has the youngest population in the world. Whether you take the US, China, Korea, Brazil, wherever you go to in the world, Africa has the youngest population. About 420 million people in Africa are under the age of 35. And in every year, between 10 and 12 million people come out onto the job market every year in Africa. 10 to 12 million people, they enter the job market. And one-third cannot even find a job. Or a maximum of one-third are able to secure a job. Ghana's situation is different in the sense that we have about 250,000 people that enter the job market every year. 2% are able to find formal job. 98% go into the informal job or find no job. Hello? And you are also coming to join the same job market. The good news is that you will not add to the statistics of unemployed people, but you will rather add to the statistics of young entrepreneurs in Ghana. You don't like it. You don't like it. You are not going to join any association called Graduate Unemployment Association in Ghana. We cancel that in Jesus' name. But you will become the innovators of your generation. Because you are lucky to have mentors and people who have taken the lead. Our time, hardly will you find mentors. There weren't much. The middle class in Ghana started picking up not too long ago. So it's either somebody is extremely rich or extremely poor. The in-between weren't many. But one thing about entrepreneur is you can't be an entrepreneur and like to sleep. You want to sleep? Forget it. Those who are entrepreneurs will tell you that sleeping, too much sleeping, is not part of their portion. That's number one. Number two, you can't be an entrepreneur and you are indisciplined. You can't. So if you want to be an entrepreneur, you must be a disciplined person. Number three, you need commitment. Because the journey is never smooth. When the journey becomes smooth, you see a lot of people on that road. And that is where buy and sell is very common. And that is why everybody wants to put some kiosk or container somewhere and begin to sell provisions. Because the journey to that is not difficult. But when you have people who are sitting somewhere and trying to think of how you can use your mobile phone to move money from one person to the other, it is not an easy journey. And these are innovators and entrepreneurs, and you will be one of those people in the near future. So you can have all that it takes. The critical point in your life that will make you an entrepreneur is your mindset. Your mind. What goes through your mind every day that you wake up? Is it the first thing to look at who you can chat with or who you can seek counsel from? If your mindset is always talking about the jokes and who you will chat with, then you are deviating from being a strong entrepreneur. But before you can be an entrepreneur, first of all, understand your market and your industry. How many of you are in agribusiness? Either you are doing it as a course or as hobby. Raise your hand and don't disappoint me as if agribusiness is not a good course or is not a good profession. Anna, you did water. You see? Who has not eaten for the past 3 days? Who has not eaten? No food. So you don't like agribusiness, but you feed and you eat every day. You don't know that is agribusiness. That's why agribusiness people are always rich. Because we look at what you want to put into your stomach and we give it to you. You eat it, we take your money. Very simple mathematics. So when we talk of agribusiness, let me digress a bit. When I'm talking about agribusiness, I'm not talking about an old man who is holding hoe and cutlass going to farm to go and wheat. No, that one is farming. And that is not the one I'm talking about. How many of you know Blue Skies? The drink. You like it? That is agribusiness. The ability of that person to take pineapple and process it for it to be bottled and come to you on your dining table is agribusiness. How many of you go to the supermarket to buy fresh vegetables? You buy vegetables, that's agribusiness. The person who is selling the vegetable does not have a farm. So I'm not talking about farming. I'm talking about agribusiness. How many of you are baking bread or you eat bread? A lot of us eat bread every day. The person who is using the flour, the one who has processed the flour, is agribusiness. So there are a number of, when you go and buy meat, the chicken that you go and grill and eat is agribusiness. So it is huge, and the opportunities there are many. What I want to say is that if you want to become an entrepreneur, understand the industry to which you want to operate from. And there are people who start businesses and they lose their monies. And they will tell you that they didn't know this, they didn't know that. Take your time and understand your business. Failure is part of entrepreneurship. If you are afraid to fail, you can never be an entrepreneur. But you do calculated failure. Not like throwing monies away. If you want to be an entrepreneur, you need skills. Skills. And unfortunately, the skills don't come in the form of chew and pour. You know chew and pour. Unfortunately, that is how Ghana education system has been. The person who can chew and pour very well is the one who is the most brilliant. And he gets A. I thank God that when I was on campus, I never liked first class. I ran away from first class. I'm not saying you should run away, but if you have the opportunity, run away. And the reason why I was running away from first class was that our time, the moment you get first class, they make you teaching assistant. And then they give you scholarship, you go and do your master's. And you come back to the university and you begin to lecture. Or you go into a research institution and become a researcher. And I didn't like any of them. So I tried as much as possible to avoid first class. But if you want to go into research and become a lecturer, you need to pursue that. Mine was completely different. You need skills, ability to do things competently, not halfway, half-baked. One thing I like about German training is what we call the competency base. It is not halfway. And a typical example of you needing a skill is someone who says he's a pilot. And the way we teach our people, you get 80, you have A. I think 75, is it A or B? B plus. Oh, you people are suffering. Our time when you get 75 is A. In fact, 70 was even A. Now they have tightened the knobs. So 75 is still B plus. Now, you get B plus 75. It means there's some 25 somewhere that you got it wrong. Meboa. True. Now, if you are going to fly in the air and the pilot comes and announces that he's a pilot and he had 80. 80 is A, right? Okay, 80. And the 80, he did well in taking off. He did well in being in the air. But the 20 that he did not pass was when he is landing. Will you board the flight or you will not? Good. It's the same way you go to a hospital and they bring a doctor to you. And the doctor says, as for your problem, there has to be surgery. And I am the surgeon. I know how to cut. I know how to remove. But I don't know how to stitch when I'm done with the surgery. So if I'm talking about you being competent, I'm not talking about a half-baked skills that you will take to the job place. Or you want to be an entrepreneur and you have half-baked skills for what you are doing. Or you want to be an entrepreneur and your knowledge in the industry is half-baked. You can't succeed. There is some 20% failure element somewhere. And that 20% failure element can bring you down. Hello. Leadership is important in entrepreneurship. And I will want to give you the 5 P's of a good entrepreneur. The 5 P's. First is to perceive. The first P is to perceive. The second P is to pursue. So you perceive, you pursue. The third P is to possess. And when you have possessed, you go to your fourth P, which is to perform. And when you have performed, you go to your last P, which is to profit. So if you want to profit as an entrepreneur, you must first perceive. You must have the ability to perceive and know where the opportunities are. When you have identified the opportunities, you should have the courage to pursue the opportunities. And when you have pursued the opportunity, you should gather the courage to possess the opportunity. And there are people who possess, but they don't perform. They will look for something, and once they get those things, they just hold on to them as trophies, and they are unable to perform. If you are an entrepreneur, you possess, you perform. And when you perform, you get your profits. Again, for me, what I hate in my life is mediocrity. When you accept average all the time, it becomes your standard and becomes business as usual. So there's nothing like mediocrity in my life. You can't come to my workplace or work with me and you can present anything and it is accepted. No way. And that is why we are able to work with serious international organizations. Every report we make for United Nations, they publish it. Every report we do for German government, they publish it. Every report we do for African Union, they publish it. So you Google us and you will see a number of publications that international organizations have done for the reports that we have submitted to them. There is nothing like mediocrity. And I always expect that that same attitude will be our lifestyle and it will be in the way we do things of God. We can't do things anyhow. And as an entrepreneur, you can't do things anyhow. You have to excel in the things that you do because your results of today is going to open the door for you tomorrow. And that is what people don't know. When they get money and they have to do things, they do it anyhow. And then they struggle to get the next contract. But for us, once we get first contract, we use the resource of the first contract. The second contract follows, the third contract follows. And every time we have contracts, we never lack contracts. Because we work for perfection and excellence. As a young guy, let me advise you, never do things in a mediocre way. If you are not careful, it will be your habit. And especially as Christians, we like this statement of fanesa. There's nothing like fanesa. There should be value for money. Value for money. Before I will spend money to buy this, I will have to know the benefits that I will get. It's not like, and especially our Christian brothers, the fanesa is very common with our Christian brothers and sisters. And Jesus Christ was not a mediocre man. So don't let us hide behind Christianity and present things anyhow and expect that we should take them like that. It doesn't work that way. Sharpen your skills, sharpen your mindset, sharpen the way you do things, and it will make you succeed when you get onto the job market. Hello? Are you with me? Now, if you are also a Christian, you can never take God out of your entrepreneurship. And I like it so much. And the problem I normally encounter is when there are no projects at church for me to invest, my business begins to calm down. But anytime there is a project and I have to invest in the work of God, my business pick up. So, I don't take the work of God for granted. And those who are closer to me will attest to it. So, every time my wish is that church has to be busy with activities, because that is where God opens door for me to get resources. And I have that belief that whatever God has said in the book is true. So if I give, it will come back to me. And the good thing is that when it's coming back, it's raised to powers. If you are unable to, you see, there are people who give to God what they have and when they have. There are people who give to God when they don't have. That is sacrifice and commitment. If you have a lot and, oh, now I have, so let me find something for God. But even when you don't have, you purpose in your heart and have a covenant with God, He opens the door for you. And I will share a testimony with you. Some few months ago, I chanced on something, and I'll come to it. And I told God that it is not an issue of if. That God, if I get this, I will do that. I told God that, let me get it, and I'll do it. And it was very surprising. Last month, I was in Spain with some board members of the organization, and people come to me and ask me, Dan, who are you? And I never forget when they asked me, and that was the first time I forget who I am. I forgot it. Who are you? The man asked me 3 times. I said, who are you? Tell me, who are you? Who are you? I was standing and looking at his face. I couldn't say anything because he knows my name already. And he's asking me, who are you? 3 times. Then he went to the next stage. Tell me, who is behind you? I said, tell me, who is behind you? And I was standing and watching. Until he got to the 3rd point. Who is your God? And which God are you serving? Then when he got there, I got the answer for him. I said, I'm serving the Apostolic Church God. And funny enough, the man said, ah, so it's not the Obinim or those kind of things that I said, ah. Then I said, do you know Tete Apostle? And this man is a chief. He said, yes, I know. I said, is that God I'm serving? But when I traveled with them to Spain, they came to my room and sat with me till 1:30 a.m., still trying to know how they missed a contract and I got it. And according to them, it was something that had been worked out. And surprisingly, I did not know anybody along the chain, but I got it. And the reverend in it kept talking, and I said, look, reverend, I will share a testimony with you. Whilst you people were busy scheming and planning, I was busy dealing with my God. And then he sat, well, I said, yes. And there's a message that God gave to me when we were going through this contract. And it was very clear, and I remember. He said, my favor will take you, and my wisdom will speak for you. It's a statement I never forget, and I will never forget in my life. My favor will take you, and my wisdom will speak for you. And when I said that, the reverend said, let us pray. And we prayed. And he told me that he admires my faith. I said, I don't have problem. I'm not deficient in faith. Ever since I was born, I have never been deficient in faith. If I believe in something, I go for it and I get it, including my wife. But you can never take God out of your equation. And you must make sure that when God does it, project him. In the process, because we are human, in the process, things became very tough. And people were like, oh, you should call this minister. You should call that person. So they were running through my mind. And I can testify to you that any time those things come to my mind, the contracting process stalls. It doesn't move. But the moment I come back to my faith and I tell myself that God will do it, we move 10 steps ahead. So you can't take God out of your equation. Say amen. Another thing that I will want you to take as an entrepreneur is seize the moment. Seize the moment. There are certain moments that will come to you once in your lifetime, and they won't come again. Seize the moment. I shared with my people in Asylum Down on seize the moment. And the 3 classical examples I use in the Bible all the time, my business book is the Bible. Any business principle you have from Harvard, you'll find it in the Bible. And a better version in the Bible. So me, the Bible is my business book. When you are reading it, people will read it and look for leadership. People will read it and look for miracles. I read it and look for business. But the three people who seize the moment in the Bible, number one is Jacob. He has been with Esau all the time. He has eyed the birthright of Esau. The very moment Esau said that, "I am hungry, give me food," he seized the moment. Jacob seized the moment. And that changed everything about Jacob and his life, including having the 12 tribes of Israel. So Jacob is number one. The second person who seized the moment is Rahab. They sent spies to Jericho. She hosted them. When the people were going, he said, "Your presence alone has put fear into the people in Jericho. And I know for sure that we have heard about what God did for you when we were in Egypt. So for sure, God will give you the land. But when you are coming to destroy, remember me, my sisters, my brothers, my family, and our properties." And we all know that when Rahab seized that moment, Jesus Christ came out of that lineage. She seized the moment. And the third person who also seized the moment, somebody that everyone thought he was so corrupt, but he decided to seize the moment and had Jesus Christ stay in his house, was Zacchaeus. He seized the moment. There are opportunities that come to you, but you let them go just like that. You need to seize the moment. And the way it comes is not going to be like vision. Sometimes it's the opportunity you have to interact with an individual. That alone, the opportunity you will have to interact with an individual is your moment. Don't let that moment pass, because you might not interact with that person again. Sometimes it is information. It is an information that will come to you. The moment you get that information, it is your moment. Seize it. There is a project we are running now for youth. 20 million Ghana Cedi projects. We are running for youth. And the reason why we got that project was just a phone call. Somebody called me and asked for information. And the moment I got that, it translated into a 20 million Ghana Cedi project. Seize the moment. Seize the moment. I know the second speaker will also be coming, so I'll be winding up. The last thing I will tell you is that every auditorium, as you see here, has a small door. The entrance to an auditorium is never bigger than the auditorium itself. True or false? Now, until you enter, when you are outside, do you see the beauty of this auditorium? No. Now, the entrance or door to an opportunity is always small. So watch out. You will not see the opportunity as huge and as beautiful as the auditorium. It might be a wooden door. It might be an old door. But if you can open that door, you will see the beauty of the auditorium. So watch out. There are a lot of people who see doors and they judge the door and don't make any attempt to open the door to see what is inside there. Change your mind. There are a lot of opportunities around you. And don't also think that sometimes when you are going to a place, you have a large, beautiful lounge, and then they keep you there, as a waiting room. Some people think that those beautiful lounges are their auditorium. No, move forward. The auditorium itself is there. So you don't accept smaller things as your final destinations. There are bigger things ahead. As an entrepreneur, you may start feeding like the chicken. Always your head down, eating worms and ants. But you must soon grow and feed like the eagle. Very strategic, looking at the bigger things and not ants and worms. You must pass that stage. The last thing is that if you are here and you don't know how to manage success, failure will manage you. And the way to manage success, you need two things. Number one is humility. And number two is generosity. These are the two things that you need to manage success. There are people, when they become successful, they become arrogant and they fall. How many times have you heard Dangote standing on a platform like this insulting people? Have you heard him before? Insulting people before? He won't do that. And you hear Bill Gates standing on a platform and insulting people. Have you heard that before? Do you know that Bill Gates gives generously to people? These are the two things you need, and take them as you live. Humility and generosity. If you can do that, you'll be a successful entrepreneur. Seize the moment, seize the moment, and seize the moment. God bless you all.
We want to give a better round of applause, even as Elder takes his seat. We are grateful to you, Elder. God bless you so much for sharing out of your rich experience with us. And even as we've heard a lot about entrepreneurship, we also want to learn about the formal job sector. So I'll quickly introduce our next speaker. So he has several years of experience as a human resource professional, and he has actually attained the highest certification in that field as a senior professional in human resources. He holds a number of other qualifications, including a master's degree in conflict, peace, and security from the Kofi Annan International Peacekeeping and Training Center. He has a postgraduate certificate in business administration. He has another postgraduate certificate in diplomacy and international relations, and he also has a BSc in minerals processing and metallurgical engineering from Kwame Nkrumah University of Science and Technology. He is a labor mediator and arbitrator, a trainer, an author, a speaker, and a life coach. We want to, with a round of applause, invite our next speaker in the person of Mr. Stenio Ajabin. Please give it up better for him.
Thank you very much. I want to take this opportunity to thank the organizers for inviting me. Are we happy to be here? Let me see your hands. Oh, I can't see your hands well. I can't see your hands well. Great. My topic is supposed to be the job market and the formal sector. Actually, the formal sector means the government sector. But I think the organizers wanted me to talk about, Elder has spoken about entrepreneurship, the organizers wanted me to speak about the jobs, okay, the job market, actual jobs, working in formal employment. So yes, my presentation would cover that. Great. So let me ask a question. How many of us here can tell me If you met a very important person in the lift, a very important personality, maybe the president of the Apostolic Church or the president of the country or a minister or somebody, tell me, what one thing will you tell the person about yourself? You take a selfie, okay. So you take a selfie. When you take the selfie, what result would it give you? So you can post it online to say that you know the person. Okay. Good. So apart from the selfie you take, what one thing would you tell the person about yourself? Yes. You ask for money. Okay. What would you tell somebody very, very, very important when you meet that person? One thing you tell the person about yourself. One last answer, yes. How? Okay. How did he get to where he is? We'll come to it. But there are so many mistakes we make in life. And as Christians, when God blesses us, sometimes we do not see it. Elder Akwe said that seize the opportunity. You can only seize the opportunity when you recognize the opportunity. There's something we call personal value proposition, PVP, personal value proposition. Elder Akwe said, somebody asked him, who are you? And when you are asked the question, who are you, what will be your answer? Sometimes, what you say about yourself in a split second, which may be the only opportunity you have, may change your destiny for the rest of your life, because you will get that dream job that you've always wanted. Take a selfie, maybe okay. Ask for money. Well, you spend the money and the money will be finished. When the money is gone, where will you be? So you know what? The job market that we talk about is actually everywhere and nowhere. The job market is everywhere and nowhere. Why is it everywhere and nowhere? Because the job market constitutes of people. People who have the potential to give you jobs. Very soon we are going to see statistics about how terrible the unemployment problem is in our country. And indeed, it's getting worse in the whole world. It is not only our country. So you need to be able to see the opportunities and seize it when it happens. The job market is a place where employees and employers interact on available jobs for employment. I mean, there are two options when you finish school. When you finish school, you either get employed or you go into entrepreneurship. One way is to set up your own business, which is entrepreneurship, and be your own boss. But the more common one that we know in our country is that everybody wants to work. So we do national service and we hope that we are employed. How do you get employed? You will have to interact in the job market efficiently and appropriately before you can succeed. Otherwise, you join the teeming youth who finish school and stay at home for 5 years, 6 years, 10 years, and they do not have a job. Statistics show that so every year, graduates pass out of school. Statistics show that for every graduate to get employment in a particular year, or when they pass out in a particular year, the last graduate will have to wait 10 years before they get a job in our system. So the jobs are just not available. But are they really not available? We will find out. So we'll go through understanding the job market. Who are the market players or the job market players? And then I'll share with you certain approaches for surviving in the job market. So let's start with some basic definitions. What is labor or workforce? In the job market, we measure what is happening by what we call the workforce. And workforce basically is made up of persons who are 15 years and above, and they are able to work and they are available for work. Okay, so 15 years and above, and they are available for work and they are able to work. That is the workforce. The workforce in Ghana currently is 13.6 million people. The workforce basically is almost the same number as registered voters. Okay, so 13.6 million people are available to work and are able to work out of the 30 million in this country. The workforce does not include prisoners. It does not include people on retirement, I mean people who are aged and cannot work. It does not include children. It does not include the sick. And anyone who is not able to work is not part of the workforce. Now, those who are employed are persons who are earning a salary or wage from a job or work activity. You see, sometimes we say we are unemployed, but actually statistics show that, or the definition of employment shows that we are employed because we are engaged. Maybe we are helping our parents at home with their business, and at the end of the day, they give us something. That would be seen as employment. But when you are asked, you say, oh, I'm unemployed because you don't have a formal job. So it's good to understand the definition for what the employed is. An unemployed person, however, is a person who is able, willing, and available to work within 2 weeks when notified that there's a job. He's available and able to work within 2 weeks, actively looking for work, but without work within the last 5 days. So this is a person, he does not have work or has not had work within the last 5 days. We are defining what an unemployed person is. Within the last 5 days, he doesn't have a job. Maybe we are interested in the last 5 days because it's possible he's been out of work for 10 years. That's not the problem. But to be unemployed, statistically, to measure that somebody is unemployed, for the past week, the person has not had employment, but is available, able, and willing to work with 2 weeks' notice. So anytime from day one to 2 weeks, 14 days, is available to work. These are the people we call the unemployed. But there's a more technical way of measuring unemployment from the group of persons we call underemployed. They are employed, but what they earn is so adequate that they cannot meet their basic needs. So they can't afford food. They don't have a place to sleep, and they don't have good clothes to wear, and they are underemployed. In fact, underemployment is more ruthless than unemployment. Underemployment is more ruthless than unemployment because it brings more frustration and makes people extremely unhappy. But anyway, in our country, even unemployed people survive. Some way, somehow, because of the kind of system we live in. But I have never been unemployed. So I don't know how it feels to be unemployed. And I pray that none of you are unemployed or ever get unemployed. Because I can imagine that those of us who earn some cash and are quite comfortable, we still struggle sometimes. We need certain things we are not able to get. Then let's talk about the people who don't have the opportunity to earn any income. They become beggars. They are always living on one person or the other. That cannot be God's portion for us. That cannot be our destiny. So we need to ensure that we make every possible effort to avoid being either called unemployed or being unemployed. At another time, I may share my story and have you understand why I say I've never been unemployed. I've always hopped from one job to the other. And in the past 15 years, I think I've changed jobs 5 times. And every time I change jobs, my salary is almost a double. So you can imagine. Facts and figures. There's evidence that unemployment is increasing in our country. So this is an ILO statistic that shows that currently unemployment is at 7.1% of the workforce. And that's why we defined workforce, 7.1%. But a lot of people challenge these figures because 7.1%, when you go to the ground, it looks like very small. But there's a reason why it is 7.1%. It is just because of how unemployment is defined. So it cuts out a lot of the people who naturally would be called unemployed or underemployed. Now, underemployment is not employment. So when you are underemployed, you don't really have the capacity to be called an employed person because you are not earning a decent wage and making a decent living. Let's look at more facts. So I mentioned that the workforce in Ghana is 13.6. Let me bore you with these figures a bit because they are the foundation based on which I would give you the approaches for surviving in the job market. So every year, between 250 and 300,000 graduates are produced in the country. So tertiary students, 250 and 300,000. And this statistic was arrived at in 2014, and they had projected backwards from 2010 that the situation was like that. So let's assume that for 9 years, there have been 300,000 or 250 up to 300,000 graduates every year being produced. So that times 9 would be basically how many people would be in the job market looking for jobs who are graduates. Now, most available jobs are actually blue-collar jobs. The blue-collar jobs are the jobs that are with factories, construction, oil and gas, engineering, all of those kind of jobs. The white-collar jobs are the admin jobs, the office jobs, the ones that we normally like, so the one that we wear suits and tie. And you know, the blue-collar jobs, mechanics, I mentioned engineering, so mechanics and all those guys, they are all blue-collar workers. But the white-collar worker is the typical civil servant who wear a shoe and a suit and tie and then sit in an office like a banking worker and all that. Those are white-collar jobs. Those are the jobs that we target and we want. So those jobs are scarce and are in high demand. But those are not the jobs that are available. The jobs that are available are the blue collar jobs. It will interest you to know that the mechanic apprentice, earns more money in a month than a graduate civil servant. And we can prove it. So it means that we are looking at the wrong places for jobs that may not earn as much, while others who are humble enough to go into the areas like agribusiness are making more of the money. So at the end of the day, they live much more comfortable jobs than us, only because we want to wear suit and tie to work, and they don't mind wearing the dirty overalls and dirtying their hands. 1.3% of the labor force, that is of the 13.6 million in Ghana, have secondary education. Only 1.3%. 3.1% have completed tertiary education, like the technical universities, the universities, and other tertiary institutions. 41% of Ghanaians lack formal education. Why? Because their family just does not allow formal education. 41%. The bottom line is that we may have people in the workforce or the labor force, but we don't have people who have the competencies to be employed in the jobs that may be available. So you may think that you finish university, you need a job, but you keep attending interviews and you keep getting bounced. And you do not understand. What it means is that you may not be capable or you may not have the competencies that the jobs available require. And so you do not get the jobs. So who are the players on the job market? We have employers. Who are the organizations who give employment? We have the employees. We have government. The employees are the job seekers, like those who are finished school and are looking for jobs and are on the job market. We have recruiters, those who identify talent. They identify people with specific skills and connect them to organizations to be employed. And then we have employment agencies. These employment agencies normally would invite people to come and register with them so that employers will go there and go and get people to work with. Then we have outsourcing agencies who employ people and then they will more or less sell them or lend them to organizations to work for. And the banks and the telecom companies are doing a lot of that now. So we are talking about the job market. And we are talking about how you can survive in the job market. And this group of people you see, you would have to interact with them. I've already said that the job market basically is everywhere and nowhere, because it constitutes people. All these people, employers, government, employees, recruiters, outsourcing agencies, all these constitute people you know and you meet day in and day out. Some are in your churches. Some are in the schools you work. Some are friends of your friends, or some are parents of your friends, etc., etc. For you to survive in the job market, you will need to know how to get, how to seize the opportunities in the job market. And one of the things that you can be sure of is that in all of your career, you will have only one chance to always convince a potential employer. So you meet someone in the lift, and the person has the potential of changing your destiny, giving you that dream job that would make you now soar higher and follow your career path. What do you tell the person about yourself? How do you sell yourself to people so that they can give you the opportunities that you need? What do you need to convince a potential employer? Employers always look out for something in us. And it is not your certificate. Unfortunately, it is not your certificate. It is who you are and what you bring to the table. It is what you actually can do with your hands. Okay? So they look out for attitude and they look out for personal traits. Are you confident? Do you know your strengths and weaknesses? Are you honest and candid? Can people depend on your word? Can people trust you? Are you dedicated, committed? Are you remorseful? Are you able to say sorry? Are you able to accept responsibility for things that go wrong, for example, and own up to them and apologize for them? These are the things employers look out for. These days, certificates don't get you jobs. Because if certificates could get you jobs, people who have MBAs will not be at home waiting to be employed. What are the personal traits that you have that can make you survive in the job market? Are you multi-skilled? What are your talents? I can do a number of things. In fact, I have about 3 or more professions. I'm an HR professional, I'm a mediator, I'm an arbitrator, I'm a massage therapist, I'm a marriage counselor. Yes. All of those things, I have training and certification in them. And oh, let me add, I drive very well. So if nothing works at all, I can get a job as a professional chauffeur. If you are not multi-skilled and multi-talented, you will not survive in the world of work today. Before you know, you've been rendered redundant. Oh, you may get the job. So let me ask, when they collapse the banks, who are the people who went home? Who are the people who went home? Those who went home and stayed home are the ones that may have been doing the normal things. The very special ones were picked by the other banks. So some of them never lost their jobs. Once the announcement was made, people were giving them calls and they got jobs immediately. So you need to be multi-skilled and multi-talented and very good at what you do. Forget about your university education or your SS certificate or your MBA certificate. Those things don't matter much anymore. In human resource management, we use it to place you, as in where you begin in the organization. That is just what your certificate does for you. But as to who gets the job, it is people who have some of these traits. Do you have attention to detail? How much can you focus on a particular thing and do it? Do you have a sense of humor? Can you make people around you laugh? Are you forgiving? Can you easily let go? Do you hold grudges? These things are things that employers look out for and will shun your company and not employ you and employ the other person. Then lastly, are you peaceable and competitive at the same time? That means, can you take part in healthy competitions without getting emotional? Can you have a healthy argument of disagreeing with somebody, including your boss, without being abusive or being arrogant? Now, these things are things that employers look out for. And unfortunately, these things are not taught in school. So if you don't come from a family that teaches these values, you'll be missing out. The world out there is very cruel and does not know Christians, religion, gender. It does not. It only knows one thing: capabilities, competencies, skills, knowledge. So you do your chew and pour in school, and you go out there, you cannot do nothing. You may get employed, but you lose the job very quickly to someone else. Or you may not get employed at all. So these things that we are sharing with you are actually critical. And they are as critical as our unemployment situation in the country. Now, I took time to look at United Nations Competency Framework. This is the framework within which the United Nations pick people for employment. So they look at these things. Every person who is likely to work with the United Nations must have these core skills, must be able to communicate verbally and also written. Sometimes people speak very well. These days we have people who can Snapchat very, very well, but they cannot put together a memo or a letter in Word. There are people who can tweet. They can tweet very fast. When you see them on WhatsApp, but they do not understand what Excel is. Or they cannot use Excel to do anything. The core skills that you need includes communication. And you should be able to communicate effectively, both verbally and also written. You must be able to teamwork. Planning and organizing things. Now, Ms. Elder Akwe and I were talking about how the organizers did not communicate with us too well for this program. Since I received my invitation letter, nobody really called me to say, this is the time you are supposed to come. This is the person you are supposed to look for. This is the auditorium you are supposed to look for, etc., etc. Up to today, in fact, last week, I struggled to get one or two numbers to text and get them to get me the program for today so that I can be sure about the fact that the title or whatever I'm supposed to speak on has not changed. It's the same and all that. So assuming I was sick or I couldn't come or something, I mean, then I may not show up because, oh, no, it is not a problem. I'm just sharing these things with you that, you see, they are critical for your survival out there. And these are the little things that would make the devil steal your blessings from you. So you see, you can make jokes out of it, but that day will come when you will pray, but another person will steal your blessings, like Esau. So it is not a laughing matter, really. And the situation is desperate. I can share it with you because every day I deal with people who are desperately looking for jobs. Every day. And I pray that you do not get there. So you also have to have managerial skills. You have to have a vision of yourself, where you want to be in a number of years. You need to have leadership skills, which Elder Queer has mentioned. You have to be able to empower people. Give people some hope. Speak to people. You have to be able to manage performance, build trust, and then you have to be able to make decisions accurately. You need to be able to judge situations effectively. These things we are talking about, most of them you don't learn in school. So how do you end up getting it? From engagements like this. From being told, from being mentored, from being coached. So let me share with you the five approaches. And then I can take my seat and we can take some questions if you have questions for us. The first one is that you need to look the role. Whichever environment you want to work with or whatever job you want to do, you need to be able to look the role. And some of the things you need to do is to be groomed properly. You need to check your personal hygiene and body care. You need to know the right clothes to wear and shoes to wear. How many people know that there are three standard types of shoes, business shoes, official wear. Three types, three basic types. How many people know? I'll not share it. Google it and you'll see. Yes. Okay. So you need to know these things. For the ladies, hair, makeup, accessories. You need to know how to use these. You cannot go to the office looking like something. Okay. You need to know how to take care of your skin, your facials, your teeth. And body care includes body odor management, and that includes your mouth. And then your smile. One smile can change the world around you. Very important. The second thing is that always ensure that you introduce yourself properly. Introduce yourself right. That is what I mentioned as the personal value proposition, your PVP. My name is Senyo M. Achabe. I take care of people because I work within the human resource profession. I'm done. That's me. Another time, depending on the environment, I can tell you my name is Senyo. I'm a peacemaker. When people fight, I take care of them. That is my profession. When employers and employees fight and they go to the National Labor Commission and they are looking for mediators and arbitrators to help them resolve their disputes, some of us are listed on the list of mediators and arbitrators, and they pick, and then we take care of the dispute and settle it amicably so that the work environment will be peaceful. Okay, so you need to have your own personal value proposition. Who are you? What do you do? Apart from your name, what else can you tell a person who would take interest in you? I take care of people because I'm in human resources. Immediately, if that person has any human resources or any people management problems, he thinks he's met somebody he can talk to, he starts sharing issues with you. And before you know, you are getting a 20 million Ghana City or dollar contract. So who are you? How do you introduce yourself? Don't take a selfie. Don't take a selfie. That is not the first thing you should do. After you have said everything and you have taken that person's card and contact number and ensured that you've told the person a few things that will make the person remember you, then you can say that, can I have a picture with you? As a parting kind of comment. But not the first thing to do is to take a selfie with the person. You need to know yourself. Job candidate viability. What is your CV? Curriculum vitae. Do you know it from the top of your head? Do you have it at all? Do you know what is supposed to go in there? If you want more information on CVs and stuff, you can get my book and you can have some of those things inside. But what is your educational background, your professional career path, your dreams and aspirations, your hobbies? It will surprise you to know that sometimes just telling people what you do, like your hobby, will end up getting you a job. The CEOs in the country now, most of them are middle-aged, between 40 and 50, let's say between 35 and 50. And most of them watch football in pubs. So if you like football and you watch football, you may be having or spending time in a pub with maybe the MD of CalBank. And those people, before you see them in a particular day, you may have to book an appointment and wait hours on end to see them. But in the pub, there they are. Or in church. Elder Kwe is a big man, international consultant. He's in church. I wonder how many of the youth in his church have gotten closer to him, to understudy him, to ask him to mentor them, etc., etc. The third one is that you need to know your staff. This is where it matters. The chew and pour will not help. You really need to know things. So when you study in school, you need to be sure that you understand and know how to apply the knowledge that you are getting. Because out there, you will need it. Know your stuff, your technical knowledge. If you say you are an engineer, you need to know your stuff. And you need core skills these days, soft skills these days. How do you interact with people? Do you have presentation skills? How do you manage your anger? How do you manage your emotions? How do you work in a team? All of those things are important. Practical, professional, and social skill sets. These things are what will get you a job in the job market. Personal competencies and abilities. I always ask this question. Former president, ex-president, who we lost, President Mills. God bless his soul. When he collapsed and he was in the ambulance being chauffeured to 37, which doctor do you think they would call to attend to the president and save his life? Because there will be several, maybe close to 100 or more doctors in 37. Which one would they call to attend to the president? The one that everybody has trust in and believes that they have the ability to be able to save the president. Will that be you, or could that be you in your profession? When they are counting the top 5 or 10 serious professionals in the area of expertise that you decide to study in or specialize in, would your name be there? Excellence. Excellence. So you have to make use of other wow factors about yourself. That is your strength that would make you different from another person. It is these things that get you jobs in the workplace. You need to know the organizations you want to work with. You need to know what they do. You need to know where they get their money from. You need to know how the business runs, etc., etc. Who are their competitors? Which ongoing projects they are doing? Their unique attributes and strengths, and also their weaknesses. I have a friend who walked into an interview with a CEO, and then just at the end of the interview told the CEO that, oh, in fact, I read somewhere that you have this problem. That problem is solvable. Give him a solution, and the next Monday he was working with the company. So if you can diagnose organizational problems, you definitely would hop onto the team easily. The last one is to be interested and show interest in the job or whatever you want to pursue. You need to make sure that it is relevant. And in the job market, you should know that you are always aiming at getting the job. So anything else is a side issue. And most importantly, you need to build a network. A lot of people say that to get a job in Ghana today is about who you know. Well, the technical terminology is networking. Your network is your net worth. A lot of times we say the assets you have and the information you have is not only what is in your head, but what is in their heads in or what is owned by people you know and people around you. So you need to build a network and keep that network. How do you build the network? You need to get closer to people you know have the ability to help and be able to hold your hand and show you how to move ahead. And when they find opportunities, your name comes to mind and they give you a call. And getting a job these days is only about a call. Can you send your CV to this person and speak to him that I said you should come? You have the job. So you need to build a network. And last but not the least, even though our culture sometimes hinders us in this, we need to be people who ask questions. We need to ask questions and seek understanding. Okay. So there's a decision to make. There's a lot of unemployment. People are not getting jobs. We all say there are no jobs, even though we in the industry know there are jobs, but the jobs may not be the polished jobs that everybody wants to do. We need to make a decision to join the group of people who say that, Ghana is hard, there are no jobs, and then we are inside. Or the people who are optimistic and know that, look, there are opportunities everywhere. And so we will take the decision to find those opportunities. And when we see those opportunities, we seize them. And then it changes our destiny. Because believe you me, when you finish school, you don't see some of your mates for a long time. The next time you see some of your mates, they are so ahead of you that when they call for old students meeting, you don't want to go. I pray that that is not your portion. Say amen. Amen. So I have this book called The Career Toolkit. It has all the things that I've spoken in it. If you want to be able to make the best use of the job market, this book can help you. Thank you so much for your attention, and may God bless us all.
Please put your hands together and give a better round of applause. That was a very powerful and succinct presentation. God bless you very richly, Mr. Senyo. We want to take 3 questions for the first speaker, Elder Dan, and 3 questions for Mr. Senyo. I'm going to ask that the microphone move around. If you have a question for Elder Dan Akwey, I'll take 3 questions. So please come forward. The first 3 people to come forward. 3 questions for Elder Daniel Akwey. Please come forward if you have a question. So I want the 3 who want to ask questions for Elder Dan should be on my left. Okay, we have one person coming. If you have a question for Mr. Senyo, I'll take 3. Please come to my right. The first 3 to come. Okay, so please go ahead and ask your question.
Okay, thank you very much. I think I've been given a lot of insight today. Thanks to the 2 presenters. My question is, if you find yourself in the formal sector, like the job market he talked about, and you want to go into entrepreneurship, how do you do it such that you don't compromise on your integrity at the workplace? Thank you.
We'll invite Elder Dan. Do we have anybody else who wants to ask a question? Ask Elder Dan a question. Okay, then we'll invite Elder Dan to answer. And then we'll quickly take another question for Mr. Senyo.
Your question is very valid. And I'm sure a lot of people are already doing that. They are in the formal sector and they have what they call side jobs or other enterprises. It's because if you have started life and you've started earning income, it's not easy to just stop it and go into, let's say, the informal sector to set up your business. Where will you get income to sustain your family? So you balance the 2. But you must be driven with passion. And like I said, understand your industry and know your vision. I've seen a lot of people who were in the formal sector, especially bank. I think the banking sector, the people there are the people I pity most of the time. I see young ladies who struggle to go to the banks. They enter and they are like, oh my God, I didn't know it was like this. I wouldn't have entered. So a lot of people from the bank, they resign and just go and start their own businesses. So you can do it. And you start small. 90% of your time in the formal, 10% of your business. Over a period, it becomes 80-20. Before you realize it is becoming 60-40. Once you hit 60-40, then you are on the right course to have your business and you can just move out completely. It also depends upon the kind of job you have. If your job is very demanding, it becomes difficult. And remember, if you don't have time and you want to do telephone business, you always run into troubles. There are people who will call them telephone farmers. He has a farm. He never goes to the farm. Every time he will call someone to find out how is the farm, and they say everything is fine. You wait and go there yourself one day. That's where you see Bobo Labo. So you can do it, but please measure your time. It's not an issue of money. It's an issue of time. So measure the time very well.
Please, who are you addressing your questions to?
Ok, tout d'abord, j'aimerais bénir le Seigneur pour la vie de l'entrepreneur. Voilà, je dirais que je suis un petit entrepreneur et comme il est toi dans le domaine, je suis vraiment impacté par son enseignement. Nous savons tous que les banques ne font pas des prêts aux nouveaux entrepreneurs, mais ils accompagnent. Du moment où j'ai un projet, mais je n'ai pas de prêt ou bien je n'ai pas de moyens pour pouvoir démarrer, comment le faire? Voilà, c'est là mon intégration. Merci beaucoup.
I think his question is for Elder Dan. Okay. He first started by praying thanks for your presentation. He was very involved with it. He's asking a question. He wants to start business. And with starters, banks don't give loans like that. And then how does he get money to, you know, start the project and to sustain it and get there? Amen.
Please, if there's someone who has a question for Elder Dan, we would want to add that question before he comes to answer. The next set of questions will be addressed to Mr. Senyo. Is there any other person? Okay.
We face this question and we hear it all the time. You want to start startup and you are looking for money from the bank. But I want to ask you, in your own house, will your father give you 100,000 Ghana cedis to start a business? Why? Why? He doesn't trust you. Okay. Now, if your own father cannot trust you and cannot give you 100,000 Ghana cedis, how much more a bank that does not know you biologically? So, it's basic principle. For you to get money from the bank, you must have trust record. And there's an issue of trust. Sometimes you can go to the bank with collateral, but the bank will still not give you the money. They can't trust. They are not interested in selling your property because they are not in real estate. By your ability to pay, that is what they are interested in. But there are several ways of financing startup projects. If your project is good, and you believe it in yourself, and other people believe that your project is good, some family member can support. A colleague, sometimes it can even be a father of your friend. He can support. You can also sell your idea to another person who might be interested. I did it the same way. When I was doing national service, we're having farm with some of the apostles, some of the people who are now apostles here. I was a service person. I had no money. But I was able to build the idea and convince them, and they invested money into their business. So we had pawpaw, and we're exporting pawpaw to UK. So you have to be sure of your business itself. Sometimes somebody comes to me, I have this business I want to do, I'll need money. And the moment you ask the person, how much do you need? Then he's confused. And the moment you tell me any amount you can give to support me, then you are completely out of my radar. It means you have not done any calculations. And it also means that you don't want to even pay them back the money I'll give you. Because if you pay, you tell me that I need a loan of 500 Ghana cedis or 2,000 Ghana cedis. I will use it for 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And in 3 or 4 months' time, I'll be able to pay back. Then I'll be interested and say, okay, explain the business to me very well. Because sometimes the loan that you will need is money for lunch. Most of the time, when young people come to us and they want loan for their businesses, these are monies that we sit at one lunch and it's gone. So for me, those things are no monies to me. But I won't give you because you will not manage it well. But if I know that you can manage it well, I will invest in you and the people that I have invested in them. Okay.
Thank you very much, Elder. Is there any other person who has a question for Mr. Senyu? Please come forward if you... Okay, so we are taking a maximum of 3. We have 2 already. Is there a third person coming?
Thank you very much, Mr. Senyu. My name's John Pechi. I have a few issues here that I want us to look at. It's a pregnant issue. First, when you look into our country, we have a lot of problems. When you read the graphics about the employment, the first thing you see is 3 years working experience. Question one, where are they expecting us to get that experience for them to do the work? The second issue that I have, looking at the figures that you projected for us, most of the people are unemployed, but technically they are employed per the definitions that you have displayed on the board. In Ghana, we have a retirement compulsory age of 60 years. But when they are appointing people to work, most of the people in governments now who are working in the offices are above 60 years. And the youths are unemployed. So as a technical person, which advice can you give to the lawmakers pertaining to that 60 years retirement age? Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. My question was about your definition for an unemployed person. You said it's a person who has not had any job for the past 5 days and is willing to work for the next 14 days. I want to know the reason why the person is willing to work for the next 14 days and not for the rest of his life. Because the person is not unemployed. So why is the person not willing to work for a longer period? Thank you.
Amen. I'm Samuel Afo. My question is 2. That's one for Mr. Senyo and one for Elder. Initially, I was confused. I was to come and ask the whole notes. The first question is, I'm an electrical engineering student. But this is the case that I have a dream of who I want to be in future. But then, I also want to have much interest in other things, other businesses, which I want to be an entrepreneur of it. How do I go about that one? Like, two. And my, to Mr. Seyon. Mr. Seyon was talking about maybe as going for, on a job market, before you go for an interview, you should be somebody with some qualities that you mention them. Maybe I'm a good communicator. I can convince you very well. But this is the case that I lack confidence. In this aspect, how do I communicate to the person? How do I sell my knowledge I have about some things to the entrepreneur? Thank you.
Very interesting, eh? Especially when they ask Mr. Senior why, if I want to work for the rest of my life, then you are saying 14 days. How? I agree with you. We want to work for the rest of our lives. 14 days. You have to work on that definition. The gentleman asked a question. He's an electrical engineer. He wants to go into other things to be an entrepreneur. Look, quite recently we hired about 20 people. I think last 2 months or so. If you are interested, you see Elder Larry Amekuse or Buama Matheson. In fact, when we're even looking for people from within Aposa, we're not getting much. Because you don't communicate. Even though it is an agribusiness oriented, we picked people with diverse backgrounds. So you can be an electrical engineer, but a passion in an area can drive you even out of your core area of engineering. So it is possible, but it comes back to the issue of competence. You mentioned that you might not have confidence. I know Mr. Jabin will address, but I'm also an employer, and I employ people. And if you don't have confidence, you don't come near. Because how will you go and stand in front of people and even present your case if you don't have confidence? So you have to go and build your confidence well. I one time went to Zambia. I was interviewing people. There was one particular guy. Looking at his CV, we thought he was the best. So all the others, we did it quick, and then they all left, hoping that the one with the strongest CV will come and impress. This guy came and he had no confidence. I even requested they should interview him using local language, because we're looking for an extension officer in Zambia. Even that, he couldn't. So I asked him a last question. I said, you are married? He said, yes. I said, how did you tell the lady that you love her? And do you know the answer? He said he sent his friend.
Don't send your friend. Go yourself. Okay, quickly. Let me take the 14 days, the definition question. I think you got the definition wrong. The 14 days stands for a person's readiness to present themselves at the workplace. You see, when I tell you that you've been employed, for everyone, you need time to prepare, put yourself together. Maybe you live in Tamale, the job is in Accra. You need to sort out things in Tamale, move to Accra, look for accommodation, sort out yourself, and then present yourself at the workplace. So the 14 days availability means that is like the notice period. Okay, so that's the definition, that the person is available to be able to present themselves at the job within 14 days. So it is not like the person is available to work for only 14 days. No, that's not the definition. So I think this clears the whole issue. Then let's talk about the electrical engineer who wants to veer off. That is just like me. I read minerals processing engineering. We normally called it metallurgical engineering. That's what I studied at my bachelor's. But one thing led to the other, and I never really went into that profession fully to practice it. But what then was helpful is that in my consulting, I have been consulting for mining companies, construction companies in the mining sector, and so I understand the language of extractive industry. So no matter what your passion is, you can study one thing and still move into the other, but you need passion, you need dedication, you need commitment, and you need the knowledge in that area. So normally I say that you can start with your hobby. If you have a hobby and you like doing whatever it is that you do that is your hobby, you can always look at the business of it and then move into that as an entrepreneur. And know this, that there is no regular job that can pay you enough to sustain everything you want to do. So most of us are regular workers, but we are entrepreneurs. We do other things on the side to support ourselves. So it is always doable. Elder Kwe has handled the, I'm a good communicator, but I lack confidence. Good communicators don't lack confidence. If you're a good communicator, then it means that you are very confident and you can present and you can write and you have serious knowledge and technical abilities to be able to communicate whatever you are doing and whatever you stand for. So today, Elder Kwe and I, we stand before a youth numbering maybe over 100, maybe close to 300, and we are able to do that confidently. So you need to be an all-rounder in the world of work today. Okay, you need to be multi-skilled. Otherwise, the system will leave you at the side of the road as time goes on. You need to be an all-rounder. So you work on yourself in all aspects of your career. Then let's handle the question on retirement age and work experience. You see, when they say they need work experience, it's true. Now, there are levels of responsibility. We call it span of control, okay? Responsibility, accountabilities in the workplace, certain things you are accountable for. In banking, for example, we can employ you as a graduate, train you for a few months, and give you an officer position. An officer position in a bank is a position of signatory. So it means you can sign documents on behalf of the bank. And I tell you, when you sign something and it goes wrong, you pay for it. So the level of responsibility you need to work in that position would need that you have some level of knowledge, technical knowledge and ability in doing that thing for at least that number of years, so that you can know all the nuances that come with that job activity and be able to handle it very responsibly. So when they say 3 years, it is actually true that they need someone with that kind of experience. But what I say is that when they say they need experience of, say, 3 years, okay, and you have 1.5 years experience, you can apply. If they say they need 8 years experience and you have 4 years, you can apply. Because work experience is relative. In a particular environment, you can spend 10 years and not learn much. But in another environment, like in a small business, you can work for 2 years and know everything. So when they say they need this number of years experience and you have half of that year's experience, apply. How then do they expect that people who are finished school and are looking for jobs should have 3 years work experience? You need to count your internships and you need to count your national service. So while people, for example, when we were in school, when I was in school in KNUSD, holidays I'll take like three jobs. One as a fitness instructor, one as a communications person for some agency, and then other things. Wake up at 4 a.m., get back to the house around 11 p.m. Throughout the holidays, 1.5 months or sometimes 2 months, and then we go back to school. We would have made a lot of money, and then when the people who went to do construction and things, security and things outside, they come back to school. They are wearing their new clothes and everything. We are also wearing some, even though we did not travel. The point is this, that you need to make use of your free time. The last thing I'll say, for example, for those doing accounting and other professions, when you come to uni, you have 4 years. By the second year, you have done the basics of accounting. Why don't you start the professional course of ACCA or CA, that by the time you finish school, you have chartered, or you have one last or two papers to charter. By national service ending, you have chartered. You are like 10 years ahead of your mates. So you need to prepare for the job market while you are in school, so that by the time they say prrr and you are in the job market, you can count some number of years or months of work experience and so on, add it to your CV, and before you know, you are getting the jobs. So the plenty chilling during holidays, you should reduce it. Yeah. Last one is the retirement age. The average life expectancy of Ghanaians has gone up. So I think now it's around 62 or so. So it means that averagely, we are expected to live around 62 years before we die. But that is the average. People now finish, get to retirement age, and they are still strong and able to work. And because normally, especially in the technical field, we thrive on a lot of experience, they are still useful to the system. How do you get into the labor market? The environment or the economy is supposed to be creating jobs for us to be able to fill. However, any job you get, you need to find ways of quickly rising into management positions. Because of responsibility, you need to be trusted before you are given certain job positions. So you need to work hard and earn it. And those who earn it, they travel up very quickly. So at 26, I became a mediator and arbitrator. My contemporary fellow practitioners, they were in their 50s, and I was the youngest at the time. And we still had cases come before us, and then we quickly rose from class C to class A, you know, within a few years. So you need to just concentrate, be committed, and work hard to rise up the chain of command. And once you are dedicated, you will get there. Don't worry about the older guys in the system occupying the positions. If you are good enough, there are positions that will be created for you to occupy. In Jesus' name, amen.